Name wasn't on any ballot. You didn't have to go to the polls and vote for him yesterday. But he's in again regardless. He's Fred Allen in person.
Thank you, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. And now that you've started the program, Jimmy, why don't you think you'd better go and lie down for a little while?
Lie down? Why, Fred?
Well, you seem a wee bit tired tonight, James. You look like a before-drinking Sanker ad, if you know what I mean.
Yes. Well, I didn't get much sleep last night, Fred. You see, I was up all night listening to those election returns.
You didn't get mixed up in that mob in Times Square, did you?
No. I hear Times Square was jammed, though.
Yeah, I was down there, Jimmy. It was terrible.
What?
This mob was awful. I was going down 7th Avenue. I got pushed into Sloppy Joe's and squeezed 3 pineapples before I got out of there. I forgot what he was selling for a minute. That would be the height of contrast, wouldn't it? The well-dressed man stepping out of Sloppy Joe's. But the crowd was really terrible. You know, crossing 46th Street, I buttoned my overcoat, and when I got home, I had 3 guys in there with me. I didn't mind the guys, but when they started playing Clabriage and the dealer was hitting me in the ribs, then I got mad.
Say, Mr. Allen.
Oh, hello, Kenny.
Hello, and can I see you a minute?
Now, look, Kenny, if it's about your Buck Rogers disintegrator, you can't shoot it off during the show. That's final.
No, this is something else. It's about the program.
Well, what about the program?
Well, I had a letter from my grandfather this morning.
Well, doesn't your grandfather like our show?
Gramp hasn't heard it yet.
He hasn't heard? Why not?
Well, Gramp sits by the radio and dozes off.
Mm-hmm.
He says the whistle and the bell at the beginning of the show give him a start.
Yeah.
But then he goes right back to sleep again. So I was thinking...
Yeah?
Well, maybe if you could blow the whistle again...
It would wake your grandfather up?
Yes, he's probably asleep right now.
Well, I'll get the sound man. Say, Ray, could we have that siren and bell again? There you are, Kenny. That ought to wake up the old boy.
Gosh, Mr. Al, I don't know. Gramps a pretty heavy sleeper.
Let's go, Ray. How is that?
Let's have one more, you know, just in...
Wait a minute. Hold it, Ray. There's the phone, Kenny.
I'll answer it. Hello? Oh, fine. Okay. Gramps awake, Mr. Allen.
Well, let's go. Before Kenny's grandfather dozes off again, we turn to the latest news of the week. The Texaco News presents The World on Parade. New York City, New York. National Hobby Museum opens its exhibition at the new club rooms in London Terrace. Unusual collector's items from costume fleas to election torches draw interest of many visitors and members of the Hobby Guild of America. To get cross-section of hobby trend today, Texaco News interviews several little-known people who have most unusual hobbies. First, Mr. Wallaboo Crumb. No, Mr. Crumb.
I was on Hobby Lobby. Does that make any difference?
No, Mr. Crumb.
I thought it might be opposition or something.
No, it's perfectly all right.
Sometimes I make a kick.
Well, I know.
My wife was on We the People. They bought her on a Goodwill court.
Well, no.
I like to make a clean breast of a thing. I was on Hobby Lobby. I come right out and say so.
Well, fine.
Yeah, some people I know could be on Hobby Lobby every night and come up here sly as you please and try to get away with it, but not me.
Well, that's very nice.
I speak my mind. And I got a hole in my head to prove it.
Good. Not that one you're talking through. Well, quiet, please. What business are you in, Mr. Crumb?
Well, I'm an assistant mortician in a sardine factory.
An assistant mortician?
Yeah. After the mortician lays out the sardines in the cans, I look in and make sure they're all facing the same way.
Well, rather depressing work, isn't it?
Oh, it gives me the dismals.
Really?
Them little sardines looking up at me, me looking down at them.
Well, try to control yourself, Mr. Crumb. You're forgetting your hobby.
Well, I can't help it. I get to thinking about them little sardines looking up at me, me looking down at them.
Well, I know.
Gives me the dismals.
Well, the dismals may be your sideline, Mr. Crumb, but what is your hobby?
Oh, yeah. Yes. Well, my hobby is not having no hobby.
Your hobby? Not having a hobby, huh?
Yeah, some men have stamp collections. Waste all their time pasting stamps in the books.
I know.
What do they got when they're through?
What?
A dry tongue and sticky fingers.
Yes, you've got...
Other men collect autographs, buy toy trains, save campaign buttons. To me, it's a waste of time.
And that is why?
My hobby is not having no hobby.
Well, what do you do with your spare time?
Well, I can't do nothing.
Why not, Mr. Crumb?
I'm always moaning.
Well, why should you moan?
I get to thinking about them little sardines looking up at me, me looking down at them.
This is where I came in.
Gives me the dismals.
Well, they're not catching, fortunately, and thank you, Wallaboo Crumb. An enthusiastic hobbyist is Turlton Sluice. And your hobby, oh, Tarleton it is, isn't it?
Yes.
Oh, excuse me. And your hobby, Tarleton...
Oh, I've had so many hobbies.
You started young, did you?
Mm-hmm. As a baby, my hobby was opening safety pins.
Really?
Yes, I had lumbago when I was 2.
Well, of course, if you leave things undone, you've got to pay the penalty, Tarleton. Did you have a hobby at school?
Mm-hmm. I saved spitballs. At high school, I pinned butterflies. You know, people used to come from miles around and say, Tarleton, let us see your butterflies.
And would you?
Well, it depended on my mood. At college, I went in for another hobby.
What was that?
I started saving turtlenecks from old sweaters.
Turtlenecks?
Sarongs for Adam's apples.
They are. Well, I must say that you have had some mighty interesting hobbies, Tarleton.
Mm-hmm.
I once combed every tree in Jersey City for birds' nests.
You collected birds' nests?
At one time, I owned every bird's nest in Jersey City.
You did?
Yes, if a bird wanted to lay an egg in Jersey City, it had to come to me.
Well, you didn't abuse this power, Tarleton.
My window was ever open to a feathered friend about to.
You would egg him on. And now that you are getting on in years, Tarleton, do you still have a hobby?
Oh, yes, indeed. Today, my hobby is mounting moose ends.
Moose ends?
Yes. Everybody mounts moose heads. I started collecting in reverse.
Well, your trophies must be a sight.
Oh, my study is simply exotic. 20 moose ends mounted on the walls.
Imagine.
To open the door is to feel one is overtaking a herd.
Frank Buck returning home at sundown.
I turn on the electric fan in my study. 20 tails wag in the breeze. It's drafty, but it's home.
Well, home because there is no place like it. And thank you, Mr. Tarleton Sluice. A young lady who has the only hobby of its kind ever listed in the annals of hobbydom is Miss Kismet Biddle. Now, Kismet, what about your hobby?
My hobby is humiliating cows.
Humiliating cows?
Yeah. A cow once done something I didn't like, and I took a note to myself then and there I'd get even.
And?
I've been humiliating cows ever since.
Well, what did this first cow do to provoke your eternal venom, Kismet?
That, mister, is between me and that cow. I'll go on humiliating cows till the cows come home.
And when the cows come home?
I'll humiliate them.
Well, how do you practice this unorthodox hobby?
Well, say I'm at the rodeo.
Yeah.
A cow walks over to the box where I'm sitting.
Yeah.
I lean over and give her a dirty look. The cow gets it, blushes, and scrams.
Nasty, I must say. You didn't snub Elsie the cow at the World's Fair this summer, did you?
That one, I give it to her good.
Well, how did you humiliate Elsie?
Every day at milking time, I'm there.
Yeah?
When Elsie gets off the pail, she's standing there bowing and mooing.
Yeah.
You'd think she was giving whipped cream.
And you?
I pull out a can of condensed milk to show Elsie she ain't indispensable.
That kismet biddle is positively cruel.
Oh, can I help it? It's me hobby. I got the whole thing in a poem.
Oh, an anti-bovine dactyl that you've written? A cow poem?
Yeah.
How does it go?
I hate one thing, and it's a cow. It's wrong to hate, I will allow. I love all else, but still somehow I hate one thing, and it's a cow.
Lovely.
A cow gives man its milk and hide, its hoofs for glue, its meat inside. It gives its calves to man for veal. Still how I hate that horn schlemiel. I hate a cow by any name. Holstein, Jersey, it's all the same. Over my eyes, you ain't pulling the wool. I hate a cow, and that's no bull.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, Kenny Baker, whose hobby is well known to us all, lobbies for his hobby with trade winds. Thank you. That was swell, Kenny. Say, Jimmy, have you got a minute?
What do you want, Fred?
About 20 seconds of it.
All right.
It's about my aunt up in Boston. Now, she has my interest at heart, and she sent me a joke to use on the program.
Are you going to tell it?
Well, I'm not sure whether I should, Jimmy. Now, would you mind listening to it and giving me your opinion?
Well, gee, Fred.
Well, I knew you'd be happy to do it. Now, here's the joke. Quote, two flute players met on the street. One flute player says to the other flute player, highfalutin, unquote. Well, James, what is your honest opinion?
Look, Fred, do you mind if I just go ahead and read my commercial?
Now, don't evade the issue. What do you think of my aunt's joke? This means a lot. She might go in for writing and turn up with canter in later life.
Well, to tell the truth, Fred, I'd call that a dud.
You're a hard man, Wallington.
Well, regardless, it's the truth. When a gag doesn't quite go off, doesn't get a big laugh, it's a dud.
Hal Goodman and his orchestra, every man a virtuoso, have just played Who from the pronoun of the same name. And now, ladies and... Goodman's laughing. He knows what a pronoun is. Showing off. And now he thinks it's a noun that's for something, a pronoun. Well, and now, and... Quiet. Oh, please. We've got so much entertainment. It's chock full here. And now, ladies and gentlemen...
Hello, Mr. Allen.
Well. Hello, Portland. Come on, allez-vous.
Très bien, allez-vous?
Hey, I didn't know that you spoke French, Portland.
Mais oui!
Well, Jay Sweeze on Uncle Dumonkey. How much French do you know?
Only enough to answer anything you can say.
You poor kid, linguistically. Where did you... Yeah? You're thinking of something you're going to say, huh?
No.
If you are, say it. It might help. Where did you learn to speak French, Portland?
From my cousin. He's helping tear down the French pavilion at the World's Fair.
Oh, he's picking it up over there, hey? Well, I wondered why you were speaking a broken French. I speak the pure second-year night school. The patois of classroom two.
Are you going to night school again?
Oh, I have to. I borrowed a lantern. I've been going every night. I'm on information... Quiet. I'm on information, please, a week from next Friday. I've got to brush up. Gosh.
You are?
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Wait till Jack Benny hears about that.
Oh, yeah? Benny can't even get with the quiz kids.
You mean Jack is unsmart?
Look, his head is just something that keeps his neck from coiling down into his collar. Benny's IQ is lower than a ferret's habitat. Where's Goodman laughing at that, you see? Habitat he can't handle.
strictly a pronoun man. A who man?
Did you hear what Jack said about his new picture?
His new picture? I'm in that picture, don't forget.
Jack called up the director.
Yes, I know. He called up Mark Sandridge to try and get first billing. Mm-hmm. First billing, and I'm in the picture. Why, that's like Gene Autry's horse calling up and wanting to be billed ahead of Gene.
But why shouldn't Jack's name come first?
Now, look, if Benny has any brains, my name will come before his.
Why?
Well, if my name is first and Benny's is second, Benny's relatives who read from right to left will think he's the...
I don't get it.
Well, don't bother with it. Why, you're mastering one language at a time. Well, come in. Come
Mr.
in.
Mr. Allen?
I thought there were two of you. I said come in twice. Excuse me. Yes?
I am here on a mission of great importance.
Now, look, son, here's a dollar. I'm very busy.
Put that filthy lucre back in your stocking, Allen. I don't want your tainted pelt.
What do you want?
Time.
Time?
Yes. Madame Lazonga was here last month. You gave her a minute.
And you, too, want a minute at my microphone?
Yes. I, too, have an important message.
All right, I'll introduce you. Who are you, sir?
I am the man who first said, begin the beginning.
Oh, I didn't know. I didn't know.
Yes.
I'll introduce you. Stand by, America. Here is a vital message. 2 years ago, this man here at our microphone tonight said, begin the beginning. Tonight, he says...
Stop it!
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, that's what I said.
Oh, so that's what I heard it. Adieu.
Yes. This place, I don't know what it is. This place seems to attract people who have been liquidated mentally. Well, now, Portland, what about our guest?
Tonight, you present Major Bowes, Amateur of the Month.
Well, so I do. We welcome a young lady who appeared on Major Bowes' program October, I almost coined a month there. October 17th. Tonight, through the Major's kind assistance, it is our pleasure to present for her professional radio debut, Miss Carla Thompson. Good evening, Carla.
Good evening, Mr. Allen.
Now, before we start, may I compliment you on your swell performance on the Major's program.
Thank you.
Tell me, Carla, how does it feel to be coming out professionally? To know that tonight, the first Social Security payment will be deducted from your first salary.
I'm a little excited, naturally.
Hey, would you like to have me tremble a little so we'll have something in common?
No, I'll be all right, I hope.
Fine. Now, first, where is your home, Carla?
I live in Crown Heights.
And where is Crown Heights?
It's in Brooklyn.
It's in Brooklyn, really? I don't know who is ever at home in Brooklyn listening to radio programs. Anytime you mention Brooklyn, the house falls down. Everybody from Brooklyn is around in all the studios. Well, isn't Crown Heights rather a hi-hat name for a section of Brooklyn, Carla?
Oh, I don't think so.
You don't?
Some parts of Brooklyn are very nice.
Well, perhaps I've never gotten far enough into the interior. Tell me, Carla, how old are you?
I'm just 20.
Sweet 16 and four to carry, huh? And how long have you been studying singing?
I've never really studied, but I've been singing since I was 7 years old.
Well, isn't that odd? I started at 8. I was singing bass in the kindergarten glee club. The Mester Singers. But how did you come to get interested in singing so young? The stork didn't bring you wrapped up in an orchestration, did he?
No, Mr. Allen. My mother plays the piano. She's taught me all I know.
Well, that makes your talent all the more remarkable. But tell me now, Carla, where did you first start singing at 7? You weren't in the floor show a child.
No, I sang mostly at church festivals and charity affairs.
You were a little her singing hymns, huh? Well, as you grew older, were you interested in classical music or swing?
I've concentrated on popular songs.
Yeah.
I guess I'm what you call a torch singer.
An incendiary contralto, hey? Say, do you know where the expression to carry the torch originated, Carla?
No, I don't.
Would you, you want to say that again? I didn't quite hear you.
No, I don't.
Thank you. Well, would you like to have me tell you how the expression to carry the torch came about?
Yes, I'd love to know.
Well, I'm going to tell you right now. Pull up an E flat and sit down. Well, up in Booth Bay Harbor, Maine, many years ago, Carla, there lived a beautiful girl named Madeline who ran a lighthouse. A lighthouse. Matches hadn't been invented in those days, and every evening Madeline had to go down to the village, light an old broom she had soaked in oil, and come back to the lighthouse and light the lamp. A young lobster pot designer fell in love with Madeline, and every night when she came down to the village to get a light, he'd walk her back to the lighthouse. He expected to marry her, but Madeline finally eloped with the purser on a catboat. Her lover hoped that someday she'd come back. And every night he kindled the old broom, walked out to the lighthouse alone, and lit the light so she'd know. People up in Booth Bay, seeing the boy go by night after night with his flaming broom, used to say he's still carrying the torch for Madeline. And that's how the saying started.
That's very interesting.
Well, thank you, but I don't believe that came from the soul, Carla. But tell me, what have you been doing while you've been waiting for your ship to come in?
I've taken odd jobs from time to time. And I've studied at the National Youth Administration Radio Workshop.
The radio workshop is supported by the government, isn't it?
That's right.
Well, I know Mr. Stanley Stevens, the director of the Youth Administration Workshop, and he's doing some excellent work developing fine, new, young talent. But tell me now, Carla, how did you come to appear on Major Bowes' program?
Well, so many boys and girls have gotten their opportunities through Major Bowes. I thought I might have a chance to make good, too.
Well, Major Bowes and I think you have an excellent chance, Carla, and we wish you every success.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Carla, for this pleasant little chat tonight. And what song would you like to sing for us?
Fools Rush In.
Mr. Goodman, if you will. Thank you. And now, ladies and gentlemen, we have a special guest tonight. The Eskimo consul here in New York City has sent us, or loaned us rather, the official Eskimo Gallup weatherman, Bazook of the North, who will give us a short talk on Arctic weather conditions. I give you then Bazook.
Ogilvy in Unkse water, Mordusy Olahop Mosh.
I'm sorry, bud. But that North Pole double talk doesn't go here. Can you couch your remarks in plain everyday American? That's what I thought. Well, I mean it. It's too bad, buddy, but we're not getting any place, you especially. Say, isn't there someone here who can translate Eskimo?
Yes, I can, Fred.
You speak Eskimo, Jimmy?
Like an igloo.
You do? We won't hear much out of you tonight, then, will we? Well, we are certainly lucky. What is this fellow trying to tell me, Bazook, here?
Yeah, well, he's saying that chill fall weather is here and winter cold ahead. And something should be done if you want fast starts. This is Mr. and Mrs. Average Man's Roundtable, where three persons selected from our studio audience are invited to give their opinions on a question that concerns some prominent issue of the day. This little session is entirely unrehearsed. Fred takes his place at the round table where he meets his fellow debaters for the first time. Are you ready, Fred?
Yes, I am. Thank you, Jimmy. If Portland will kindly introduce the first member of our board.
Yes, Mr. Henry Ephraim from New York City.
Well, good evening, Mr. Ephraim.
Good evening, Mr. Allen.
May I ask your profession?
I'm a stage manager, Mr. Allen.
Stage manager?
Yes.
With some show current in New York, or are you at Liberty?
No, I'm not at Liberty, Portland.
Fortunately for you.
I'm with George Washington Slept Here at the Lyceum Theater.
George Washington Slept Here? You're making up the bed down there for George?
Well, I want to tell you, that's a delight, see you, Mr.
Yes.
I want to tell you, I saw the show last week, Mr. Efren, and it really is a fine comedy. There are a million laughs in it, and I enjoyed it thoroughly. Tell me, I wanted to ask you, as stage manager, you have charge of the sound effects there, don't
yes,
you?
Yes, I do.
Could you tell me how you get that effect with the making, the boring, the well for the water in the yard outside the house? How do they do that?
Oh, we get it very simply. We got the idea from George Kaufman. He said we should drill a well every night backstage, and when we strike oil, we'll close the show and quit.
Well, now, that's a good idea, but you have to find a Texaco show in there when you strike oil. I don't know whether that would be the solution. But I really, Mr. Efren, and you can thank Mr. Kaufman for a very pleasant evening. I enjoyed it. I was sitting next to me there. There were two people from California, I guess, a man and his wife. And in the second act where you had that rain effect,
yes.
That was you up there, I imagine.
Yes.
Running, running
yes.
With a hot water bag up and down. But when this rain started to come down, this lady from California turned to her husband and said, "Look, Phil, there's that stuff we saw at Boulder Dam." thanks a lot, Mr. Efren. And now, Portland?
Mrs. Irma Bonney from New York City.
Well, good evening, Mrs. Bonney. Miss Bonney or Mrs. Bonney?
Mrs. Bonney.
Well, I never know it, Mrs. Bonney.
Thank you.
Tell me, are you engaged in business here in New York, or do you live here?
Yes, I am, Mr. Allen.
You're in business?
I here? Own the Spanish Language Center of New York.
Spanish Language Center? What is that, a Spanish school?
We teach Spanish, we translate Spanish, we do Spanish recordings for moving pictures that are being sent to South America.
Really?
We also do Spanish publicity for artists going to South America.
You don't cook Spanish omelets up there?
Not yet.
Sideline, do you?
No.
You don't, huh? Well, I imagine with the friendly spirit that is motivating the South American countries and our own country, that there must be a great interest in Spanish at the moment.
There is a tremendous interest because, of course, as you have just said, the commercial relations between the two countries at the present time are very important.
Yes,
and it's
are.
Most important that young men going to South America learn to speak Spanish.
Sure, if they're going to be in business, naturally. I don't know much about Spanish. The only thing I know about it is that the J in Spanish is always pronounced like an H, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, do you know Hack Benny that Herc? And now, Portland.
Mr. Lester Zins from Brooklyn, New York.
Good evening, Mr. Zins. May I ask your profession or business or...
I'm a pitcher for the House of David baseball team.
You're the pitcher for the House of David. But I wouldn't... I thought all the players in the House of David team had those big muffs. Where is your... where is your beard?
We shave as soon as the baseball season is over.
Oh, you shave as soon as the baseball season is over, do you? But I was going to ask you some questions, but you won't mind if I go ahead, will you? We're a little short for time. I was going to ask you how many games you play in a season. You barnstorm all during the summer, don't you?
We play an average of 115 games in 4 months.
You do? And you wear your beards all the time? Isn't it rather messy sliding into second?
It isn't so bad sliding... But while eating soup, we find it quite a strain.
Well, of course. Well, that stops me, a joke like that. You wouldn't hear in a lifetime. Well, that about brings us up to our question. I was going to say consomme of art, consummate or somebody. A quick pun like that escapes me, and the time is fleeting. Well, that about brings us to our question. And tonight we ask your opinions, our little committee, on a form of oral demonstration that has been making rapid strides of late in newsreel and moving picture theaters. Formerly, patrons maintained decorum in the celluloid marts, but today hissing, booing, and catcalling are common practices in theater showing the new films. Now, our question tonight is, in your opinion, is it proper or improper for a person to give audible vent to his approval or disapproval of persons or events shown in the newsreels? Now, first, Mr. Efren, how do you feel about these demonstrations in newsreel theaters?
Well, I think it's all right to give vent to your approval or disapproval. It seems to me to be a kind of a harmless way of giving off feeling and sentiment at the those occasions. Doesn't political. It. Doesn't cost anything. As cost long as it doesn't anything. Hurt anyone.
And you test the acoustics in the joint at the same time. Well, that's one way to look at it. And Mrs. Bonney, how do you feel about it?
I think that it's probably not good manners, but it certainly releases one's inhibitions.
You have a sound argument there. I'm quite sure Mr. Zins has a joke that's coming. Well, you are in favor, then, Mrs. Bonney, you might say.
Yes, I am.
In expressing yourself. You don't think it will get to other things, do you, where... if you don't like the dial system when you get a wrong number that you have to hang up and start hissing in the phone booth, you don't think it'll come to that?
I think it would be a good idea.
You do, really?
I do.
Well, you have something. And Mr. Zins, how do you feel about this booing and catcalling business?
Well, I believe if you're not in favor of what... Are you trying to rattle me?
No. This is my own face, so help me.
Well, I believe if you're not in favor, you don't necessarily have to show disapproval, whereas if you do approve, your applause would be most welcome.
Well, that's perfectly right. In other words, you should withhold your opinion unless it's favorable and then go the whole hog. Is that right?
I believe so.
Well, I think we've made a pretty mess of things, company. I doubt very much that I can't read. I've got to either get glasses or longer arms. I doubt very much that our discussion tonight will curb this raucous outburst in newsreel theaters. Personally, I think that people have a perfect right to yell at the newsreels because when sound came in, the news reel started yelling at people. And turnabout, as the man said when he spun the crooked roulette wheel, is not fair play. Now, on this sage note, our forum closes, and thank you, Mr. Ephraim, Mrs. Bonney, and Mr. Zins for your kind cooperation. Thank you. Now, Kenny Baker sings tonight. And say, before you start, Kenny, I hear glowing reports about neon is lighted all through the Middle West, they tell me. These glowing reports about your concert tour. Where are you singing this week?
Well, Saturday I'll be in Denver.
Okay.
And the 11th in Kansas City.
Well, I just wanted it for my diary. I'm keeping a record. Thank you. Very good, Kenny, and good luck in Denver Friday and in Kansas City Monday. I hope you don't get a hot scooter making those towns so quickly. Say, Portland, while I think of it...
Yes, Mr. Allen?
What is the matter with your mother? She's been sitting down there in the third row all evening, looking as if I were a termite at her wooden wedding.
Oh, Mama's sore on account of you insulted her.
I insulted your mother when?
The other day.
Yes?
She showed you her car.
I didn't say a derogatory word. I praised the car. I said what a beautiful covey of tin it was. I said...
Yes, but you didn't ask to drive it.
Was that an insult?
Mama said so.
Why should it be an insult?
Oh, you'll have to ask Mama.
Oh, no. I'll do it the easy way. I'll contact our authority on automotive etiquette. Larry Elliott.
Yes, Fred.
Larry, what is your verdict on this unfortunate faux pas that I apparently have committed? Did I really, honest-to-goodness, insult Portland's mother by not asking to drive the car?
Oh, maybe Portland's mother's too sensitive, Fred. Mm-hmm. But I know this. It's a compliment to a car owner when someone says, "That's a nice job, that car of yours. Mind if I take the wheel and drive a bit myself?"
Tonight, the Texaco Workshop Players, ladies and gentlemen, offer their tribute to the unsung hero of the 1940 football season. It's called The Story of Bramson Snide. Each football season produces its outstanding figure. One year a player, another year a coach. 1940 now stands ready to choose its favorite. Who will be America's gridiron hero number one?
I nominate Tommy Harmon, brilliant Michigan back.
I nominate Carl Snavely, outstanding Cornell coach.
I nominate Frank Regan, flashy Penn star.
Yes, these heroes have their claim to fame, but none is as deserving as our candidate. For 1940's football hero number one, we nominate Bramson Snide. Bramson Snide is no dynamic fullback. Bramson has never won a game in the last minute of play, but Bramson Snide, in his humble way, stood up under
hardship and abuse that would have crushed any brawny giant stalking the gridiron today. This, then, is the tale of a lowly football fan, the story of Bramson Snide. Bramson Snide graduated from Siwash University in 1932. His one burning ambition after leaving college was to attend the great annual Siwash Army game at the Yankee Stadium in New York City. Each November, though, it was the same old story. Bramson would take himself aside and say to himself,
"Gosh, I wish I could see the Siwash Army game. If I only had the dough."
For 8 long years, Bramson didn't have the dough. But in 1940, he turned the tables on himself. This fall, Bramson Snide said to himself,
"At last I've got the dough. This year I'll see Siwash play Army. Yippee!"
A week before the game, Bramson started to prepare. First, we find Bramson making himself a pennant.
"Gee, tearing this flap off my union suit was a great idea. It makes a swell pennant."
Then Bramson rehearsed his college cheer.
"Toothpaste, liniment, gargle, eyewash, dunkum, skunkum, hold 'em, Siwash."
Bramson was raucous and ready for the Siwash Army game. All he needed now was his ticket. Bramson called the college. The head of the Siwash Athletic Committee said,
"I'm sorry, Snide. We turned all the tickets over to the dean."
The dean said,
"I haven't even got a ticket for myself, Snide. I had to give them to the coach."
The coach said,
"I gave the tickets to the team."
And the team said,
"We sold the tickets to a speculator."
"But why, fellas?
What are we going to eat all winter? Cheers?"
Bramson turned away. His hands clenched, his body stiffened. He muttered to himself,
"I'll see that Siwash Army game. I'm going to New York City."
And sure enough, that night found Bramson Snide aboard the football game special. Boisterous Siwash alumni staggered through the train, but Bramson sat alone in his compartment, wig-wagging his little union suit pennant and humming his college song, "Fair Siwash." Suddenly, his compartment door burst open.
"Well, look at who's here. My old college chum, Joe Dimwitty. Hello, Joe. What do you know?"
"I'm sorry, sir. My name is Bramson Snide."
"Quit kidding. You're Joe Dimwitty, class of 27. I'm Sam Bevins, 27, too."
"Well, I'm sorry, Sam, but I'm not Joe Dimwitty."
"You're not?"
"No, I'm not." "Say, what is this?"
"My old college buddy trying to brush me off."
"Oh, now, wait a
Just
minute.
Just because I'm only a vice president, I'm a failure."
"Please, will you stop crying on my lap? You're shrinking my pennant."
Okay, I'll go. But don't say you're not my old classmate, George. Tell me you're Joe.
"All right, I am Joe Dimwitty."
"You are?"
"Yes."
"It's funny you don't look like Joe."
"But you just said..."
"Oh, I'm trying to pull a fast one, eh? Impersonating Joe Dimwitty, eh?"
"But I'm not Joe Dimwitty."
"You're not?"
"No."
"Give me that brush. I'm a failure."
Hey, what's going on in here?
"Oh, you're just in time, conductor."
"Oh, yeah? What's this drunk doing in your compartment?"
"Nothing. I don't even..."
"Oh, so you lured him in here, huh? Trying to pick his pocket."
"Pick his pocket?
Where on are you crooks working the football trains? You're under arrest."
"Under arrest? No."
"Today. What do you know? He's fainted."
"Well, I'll bring him to. Get me some water."
"He's fainted."
"Well, don't stand there. Get me some water."
"He's... What's water?"
When Bramson was revived, he showed the conductor his union suit pennant, gave his Siwash cheer. The conductor bet him 2-1 Siwash would get beaten and withdrew. But Bramson's troubles were in their infancy. When he left the station in New York City, a man in a battered yellow vehicle followed Bramson along the curb. Finally, the man said,
"Hey, mister, want a taxi?"
"No, thank you. I never accept gifts from strangers."
And Bramson didn't take that taxi. As he plodded into Times Square, he saw a big sign over an orange juice stand.
It said, Siwash Army tickets here. A sinister fellow standing by the squeezer addressed Bramson as he approached.
Hey, bud.
Are you psting me, mister?
Yeah, you need a ticket for the Army Siwash game.
Have you got one?
Yeah, just one seat left.
Oh, boy, where is it?
Overlooking the 50-yard line. It's $10.
Here's your money.
Thanks.
Hey, wait a minute. I thought this seat was over the 50-yard line.
That's right, Chubb.
Well, this ticket says, admit one to roof at 2100 Grand Concourse.
For $10, you don't expect no seat inside the stadium, do you?
No?
No.
What's this roof ticket, then?
Look, Chum, look. Right across the street from the football stadium is a roof that looks right down on the field.
Oh, and that's where I'll be sitting?
For $10, you don't expect no seat on that roof, do you?
Hey, what is this? How do I see the game?
Look, Chum, there's this roof overlooking the field, see?
Yes?
The landlord has put up a mirror there, see?
Yes?
2 blocks down is another roof with a perfect view with a mirror on the first roof.
And my seat is on that roof?
That's right. Here's a telescope that goes with the ticket.
Well, I need a telescope?
Yeah, you're sitting behind a chimney.
Well, if I'm sitting behind a chimney, how can I see the mirror?
There's a hinge in the telescope, brother. You can make it the hard way.
With his precious ticket and the telescope clutched to his chicken breast, which was mostly dark meat, incidentally, Ramson Snide scurried back into the bustle that is New York. Now to get to the Yankee Stadium, but how? He'd have to ask the way. Stepping into a steamy cafeteria, Bramson addressed the steamy girl cashier.
Excuse me, miss.
Yeah? What's on your mind, Sharpie?
Can you direct me to the Yankee Stadium?
Yeah. You get a bus at 30 tight and tight.
Huh?
I said you get a bus at 30 tight and tight.
What's that?
Look, this is Fifth Avenue, you see? Then comes Fourth, then tight, second, first. You go down 30 tight, that's 30 tight and tight.
Well, I'm sorry, but I still don't get it.
What's the matter, you thief?
No, but...
Hey, Joe!
Yeah, Goody?
This palooka wants to go Yankee Stadium.
Oh, that's a cinch. Look, bud, you get a bus at 30, 30, and 30. You can't miss it.
Is can't miss it near the Yankee Stadium?
What a dope. Listen, Joyce. You get a bus at 30, 30, and 30, right by the Erster Bar.
Erster Bar?
Yeah, Erster Bar. Erster's. What you get pearls out of?
Yeah, it's right on 30, 30, and 30.
Now I'm back to toy-toy again.
Yeah, you hip. You can't miss it. It's across the street from a moon pitcher.
What's a moon pitcher?
Listen, for the last time, Joyce, go over to toy, go up to toy-toy, there's your bus at the toy-toy and toy Erster Bar by the moon pitcher.
Thanks a lot.
Okay.
But how do I get to the Yankee Stadium?
No! Listen, bud, forget everything I said. You want to go to Yankee Stadium, right?
Right.
Okay. Before you do anything else, go across the street into that big building.
Is that a bus terminal?
Nah, it's a night school. You can't get no place in New York till you learn how to stand English.
Bramson Snide left the cafeteria in a daze. 2 months later, a shabby, beaten little figure still shuffled through the streets of New York City looking for the Yankee Stadium. It had grown bitter cold. Bramson had pinned the little flap pennant back on his union suit to fend off big, bold Jack Frost. One brisk night, as Bramson slunk along the Bowery, he felt a large, warm hand plunge down into his muffler. Bramson wheeled. At the other end of the hand was a policeman. At last, Bramson's tribulations were over. A minion of the law would surely know the way. Bramson, address the officer.
Please, sir, how can I get to the Yankee Stadium?
Yankee Stadium?
Yes.
It's a cinch. You get a bus at 30 Titan Times by the Erster Bar at the moon pitcher.
This was the last straw. Bramson Snide fled in the direction of the East River. Some days later, a beachcomber at Staten Island found a bit of tattered flotsam riding the ebb tide. It was the little union suit pennant. That dank little flap was the end of Bramson Snide. And now, Larry Elliott with our thought for tonight.
The next few moments are devoted to the entire petroleum industry.